Good morning, everyone. Story County Board of County Commissioners meeting will now come to order. If anyone has any cell phones or any other audible devices, if you'd silence them now, it's not to disrupt the meeting. We appreciate it. And if you'd all stand and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. Next up on this morning's agenda is item number 3. This is a discussion and possible action. Approval of the agenda for November the 5th, 2019. Mr. Osborne, do we have any changes to make to today's agenda?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I believe you recommend that we move items 7 and 8, that's committee staff reports and board reports, to the end of the agenda after item 21.
Thank you, sir. Is there a public comment regarding today's agenda? Hearing enough, I get a motion to approve.
I'll move to approve today's agenda and moving item 7 and 8 to the end of the
meeting. I'll second.
Then moved to second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Motion carries. Moving along now to item number 4, discussion of possible action, approval of the minutes for October the 1st of 2019. Is there a public comment regarding those minutes? Hearing enough, I get a motion to approve.
Move to approve.
I'll second.
Move to second to approve the minutes of October the 1st. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Move along now to item number 5, discussion and possible action, approve the minutes for October the 15th of 2019. Any public comment regarding those minutes? Hearing none, motion to approve.
Move to approve.
I'll second.
Move to second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Move along now to item number 6. This is today's consent agenda. Is there any public comment regarding today's consent agenda? Hearing none, we get a motion to approve.
Move to approve today's consent agenda.
I'll second.
Move to second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Move along now to item number 9. This is discussion only. We'll take no action. This is an update from the Nevada Association of Counties, also known as NACO, and activities from the 2019 legislative session by NACO Executive Director Dagny Stapleton. Good morning, Dagny. Thank you for being here today.
Good morning, everyone. Good morning, Commissioners. Thank you so much for having me this morning. I do have a presentation for you. I think Austin's going to pull it up. Again, I'm Dagny Stapleton, the Executive Director of the Nevada Association of Counties. We are the statewide association whose members are all 17 of Nevada's counties. We want to thank Story County for your membership in NACO. I'm just going to go ahead. It should pop up in a minute. Our current officers, our 2019 NACO president is Lander County Commissioner Patsy Waits. She will be succeeded by Humboldt County Commissioner Jim French. Our board of directors is made up of at least one representative from each of Nevada's counties, and Commissioner Gilman is your representative on our board. Thank you so much, Commissioner, for your engagement. NACO's executive committee is made up of our officers as well as an at-large member. The NACO board also includes affiliate members, those statewide organizations who represent your other county elected officials. So, for example, the clerks, sheriffs, and chiefs, DA's association, and they have non-voting seats on our board as well.
You can set the space bar.
Okay. Okay, there we are. NACO was created in 1924 and is enabled in statute, NRS 244. This is our mission to support cooperation and coordination amongst Nevada's counties. Nevada's counties, as you all know, small and large, despite their disparate demographics and sizes, have a lot of common issues and concerns because counties all provide the same types of services across the state. We have a small staff, just 4 of us, but we work hard to provide our members with services that are valuable to them. Our board meets once a month and functions as a forum for collaboration. At our September and October board meetings, for example, our members discussed an update on opioid litigation, which I know is an item on your agenda today, and I'll touch on in a little bit. There's a county economic assessment project that we're partnering with the university on. We also talked about lack of funding for cooperative extension and a proposal regarding wild horses and burros. At NACO, we also work to provide information to our members. Our annual conference took place just recently, the end of September. It was hosted by Washoe County. Thanks to those of you who came down for that conference. We had a number of educational sessions, speakers, and networking opportunities. We had sessions on county fiscal issues, federal and state political updates, cybersecurity, criminal justice reform, and county roads. And all of those PowerPoints and the information from those educational sessions can be found on our website. The NACO Board has approved Churchill County as the host of our conference in 2020. So that will be in November of 2020. So we hope to see you all out in Fallon. We also provide educational workshops throughout the year. The board just approved those at their August meeting. We'll be hosting a workshop December 6th at 9:30 a.m., which is a detailed overview by bill of changes counties need to make as a result of laws passed in the last legislative session. In 2020, we'll also host educational workshops on how and when to write a county water resources plan. There was a change in Nevada law in regards to that this last session. Nevada's open meeting and public records laws, including changes made to those laws. Oversight of public defenders in Nevada, an update on that new system. And then just prior to the next legislative session, we'll do a workshop again about tips for being a successful advocate at the legislature. And those, of course, are open to all commissioners and county staff. Our website is also a valuable source of information. We have all sorts of documents and information on there. Finally, NACO provides advocacy both on federal and local and state issues on behalf of counties. During the Nevada legislative session, we are there most every day working on tracking bills that affect counties. It ends up being about half the bills that come out in some way affect everything that you guys do. When we're at the legislature, we work closely with each of our members to collaborate. We collaborate with the other county lobbyists. And also during the interim, we work to maintain relationships with legislators and provide them with information on all the things that counties do as well as our priorities. This interim, we're working on a handful of things, regulatory hearings as well as following interim legislative committees. We'll be watching the regulations for bills that were passed last session. We're also working on the implementation of indigent defense reform and regulation at the state level. We're following that closely as well as regulations related to prevailing wage. Another project we're going to work on this interim is a rural tour for legislators. This is something that was done in past decades but hasn't been done in a while. We believe this could be very helpful for our legislative activities on behalf of our rural counties. The idea is that we bring predominantly urban legislators, which is the majority of the legislature now in Nevada, bring them out to some of the rural counties, give them a tour, meet with some of the commissioners, talk about what those communities are like, what the challenges are, and some of the services, of course, that counties provide. We also keep in regular contact with our the staff from Nevada's congressional delegation, travel to D.C. each year, as you all know, and thanks for your participation in that trip, to meet with our representatives and talk about county issues. This year, when we went, we talked about Medicaid funding, grants used in county jails, PILT, various public lands issues. We also work on statewide issues that affect counties outside of legislative issues. One we always pay close attention to is the Cooperative Extension Program and funding for that, since counties are the predominant funder for that in Nevada. And then NACO also represents and makes appointments to a number of statewide committees, and a handful of those are created by state law, so we represent counties on committees like the Committee on Local Government Finance, which oversees county revenues and fiscal issues, the Nevada Rural Housing Association, the Commission on Off-Highway Vehicles, all sorts of different boards and commissions that we represent you on. Finally, at NACO, about 4 years ago, we hired a staff person dedicated to natural resources and public lands issues. We work on a variety of issues in this area. We've been an ongoing stakeholder regarding greater sage-grouse land use plans and the implementation of those, including the state conservation credit system. Also, Endangered Species Act issues, including the bi-state sage-grouse proposal regarding the California condor. We've also been very involved with the wild horse and burrow issues. We have a subcommittee that works on these issues in more detail. It's open to any commissioner and also county staff, so if anyone's interested in participating in that, please let us know. And we hired a new natural resources manager this summer, Colby Prout, already doing some good work for us, so we're happy to have him. Mr. Chair, I've got an update on legislative activities for you, and then I've got a couple more slides after that. So on legislative stuff, if you'd like, if you have any questions on anything that you guys haven't already heard about, please just interrupt me, and I can answer any questions you might have.
Thank you.
So the legislature adjourned on June 3rd, and NACO's Deputy Director, Vince Guthrow, and myself were there every day, as I said, watching and working on the many bills that affect counties. The general overview of the session is that when we started, and many of the conversations we initially had with the NACO board, there were a lot of things that we believed would have had a significant impact on counties, especially a negative fiscal impact, but also on county operations. We worked very hard last session on a number of fronts, and together with other county lobbyists, as well as the cities on certain items and the business community, worked to walk back a lot of these bills. And in the end, we can say that we came out much better than we had initially feared that we would. We met with legislative leadership as well as the governor during session on our high priority bills as well as on our NACO bills. So we're happy to report also that NACO got 5 of our 6 bills signed by the governor and out of the legislature, which is a recent record for us. So on that front, we did a good job. The NACO board also has a legislative subcommittee that met regularly during the interim and then weekly during the legislative session to provide guidance and information on pending bills. Commissioner Gilman participated on that occasionally as well, and we appreciate his participation. That's a really important committee for us, and again, it's open to any commissioner as well as county staff. So let us know if you'd like to participate in that when we get that up and going this interim and going into next session. So just briefly, the NACO bills that passed, we get 5 bill drafts. We had 5, and then we had a legislator carry one for us. Assembly Bill 21 provides a solution to the problem of smaller county boards, such as TV boards, water boards, some GIDs, that are not able to meet a quorum due to a lack of population, people interested, as well as term limits. So this bill was passed and signed by the governor, and it provides rural counties the authority to make these boards appointed, to vote to make the board appointed on an ongoing basis if that board cannot meet a quorum. SB 12 enables funds from your county 911 surcharge. I'm not sure if Story County has that surcharge. Okay, but if you do, you are now you can use those to do an audit to make sure you're collecting all those from telephone providers. SB 13 allows counties to create nonprofit organizations in times of emergency. The idea for this bill came up following the 1 October tragedy down south. There was a need for county authority to create a nonprofit to be able to receive and create an account for all the donations that were streaming in because of the tragedy from around the country and around the state. The county found they did not have that authority. We brought this to the NACO board, and some of the other counties, a number of the rural counties as well, said, yeah, that's authority that we need. And so we got a bill passed to enable counties to be able to do that, to create a nonprofit for in times of emergency. SB 48, you're all familiar with that, the rural diesel tax bill. Rural counties can now, by a 2/3 vote of their commission or a ballot measure, raise a diesel tax up to 5 cents. We developed some materials in relation to that. I believe you have them, some guidance on how that money is distributed if your county were to choose to enact that ordinance. The 5th NACO bill, which did not pass, was a bill to make a change to the primary election system in Nevada to ensure that races, including those for county commission, cannot be determined in the primary if there are only candidates from one party who file. So that bill made it through the first house. We had some problems in the second house, further than it did the session before that. But that was our one bill that didn't get through. Finally, we worked with the chair of the Senate Government Affairs Committee to get a bill to make reforms to the Office of Public Administrator. That's SB 460. Counties are now allowed to make the Office of Public Administrator an appointed rather than an elected position. This was in response to some counties having difficulties finding folks to file and fill that office in their counties. I'm not sure if you have or not, but we have available, if you want, a summary by bill of all the bills that impact counties. We also have a bill tracker which summarizes all the bills, so either of those documents are available to you if you're interested in those. A couple other high priority issues that I wanted to discuss public records. There was a comprehensive bill that was passed this session creating public records reform, SB 287. This legislation began with really significant negative impacts to local governments. We were very worried about this bill. There were fines that could have been put directly on county staff for not fulfilling a public records request, eliminating the balance test on what is in fact a local a public record, and then fines of up to $250,000 for violations. We worked on a compromise with the cities and other stakeholders and thought the way that bill came out was agreeable to most parties. You still have a right to determine what a public record is in your county. You still can recoup your costs for public records requests that are really large public records requests. There is now fines that can be put on counties for not following the law, but you have to be taken to court to impose those fines. So we do believe that was a good compromise. And though that issue probably will come back in future sessions, it's one that we worked hard on and will continue to work on. So there are also changes to prevailing wage. The biggest change was lowering the threshold for which public works jobs prevailing wage applies to. This is something that's gone back and forth over the last couple sessions. It was $250,000. Now it's down to $100,000 where prevailing wage is required on public works jobs. Additionally, there was a provision added on apprenticeships. SB 207 requires the use of apprentices now on public works jobs. However, public entities can file a waiver if there are not apprentices available in your county on particular jobs. NACO has been monitoring the potential regulations regarding this waiver, and we recently met with the Labor Commissioner to go over how she was going to implement that. The waiver process has been created. We can provide information on that if you'd like. The Labor Commissioner also, and we do think it's a fair process and will allow counties to opt out of that requirement for apprentices. On November 8th at the Labor Commissioner's office, there's a workshop how that will be implemented. So we can provide more information on that workshop if anyone is interested. Some good news on prevailing wage, SB 243, a bill that NACO supported, provides four regions for determining the prevailing wage. So now the prevailing wage in some of the rural counties will not be tied to the urban areas. On workers' comp, that was another big issue for us this session. Unions had a significant number of bills that collectively we believed would have created a total overhaul, basically, of the workers' comp system in Nevada. We worked very hard on this issue. Clark County took the lead, but we worked closely with them, met with leadership as well as the governor's office to talk about these issues. In the end, the unions were asked to walk these proposals back. A lot of the bills died. However, a couple of big reforms that have probably already impacted your bottom line did get through. AB 492, expanding workers' comp coverage for PTSD. Also, SB 215, expanding benefits related to the coverage of cancer for firefighters, expands that to fire arson investigators and trainers, expands the list of cancers that now are eligible, and also creates a lifetime eligibility for workers' comp claims for those who work over 20 years. So there's now lifetime eligibility for most types of cancer for some of those first responders, excuse me. So that was a pretty significant expansion. And we anticipate that, as there is every session, that there'll be efforts to further expand those in the coming session. Two more issues. Indigent defense reform. This is one that really will impact all counties as well, especially rural counties. AB 81 was passed. It's something we worked really hard on to try to reduce the impact on counties, but it creates a state oversight of your public defenders, creates an office to do that as well as a board. We made sure that the makeup of that board is a majority county folks. We also made sure that there were provisions in the law to all but guarantee that reforms to indigent defense, new requirements for your public defenders, will be paid for by the state. So there are mechanisms in there to try to ensure that that money for the cost of any reforms will come out of the state budget going forward. Again, that's something we're going to continue to work on. That board, the new regulatory board, has already began to meet. They hired an executive director the other day who's somebody who the board agreed and folks from the rural counties agreed was a good choice. So we'll continue to work on that issue going forward. And finally, I wanted to talk briefly about county assessments. So the state budget process is also something that we watch very closely throughout the session, especially county assessments. So those programs are costs that the state requires or pushes down, as we say, to the counties. Overall, there were two big increases this session to your child protective services costs for the rural counties, as well as Medicaid match. Story County did not see an overall increase this session to your assessments. However, your CPS assessment did increase, but it was offset by decreases elsewhere. Long-term, the big assessment that keeps increasing is to your Medicaid match. That's what you pay for long-term or nursing home care for anyone from Story County who is indigent and qualifies for Medicaid. Those were increased significantly this session. The population has expanded. The population that the state has made counties responsible for has expanded. And so it definitely is possible that over time your costs could expand there as well. One thing that NACO's done to address this is we're actually working on an actuarial study of those Medicaid costs going forward to get an idea, projection for the next 30 years of how those assessments will increase so that we'll have that information for all of the counties. Any questions on legislative stuff? And I've just got a couple more slides, Mr. Chair.
I think you're good to go.
Okay, thank you. Just a little bit about the National Association of Counties. Every county in Nevada is a member, so thanks also for your participation in that group. That organization has a very strong lobby on Capitol Hill and work on a wide variety of issues that affect counties, and we really rely on them for information and support on federal issues. We have two representatives from Nevada on their national board, Commissioner Kirkpatrick from Clark County, Commissioner Higbee from Lincoln County. There's also a handful of steering committees that you can participate on that discuss and direct the National Association on different policy areas. If there's any interest in a particular policy area or participating on those, just let me know and we can get you signed up. As I mentioned, Washoe County just hosted our annual conference, and we hope to see you in Churchill County next year. One other topic I wanted to mention, mainly because I know you will be discussing this, the next item on your agenda, is the opioid litigation, both nationally and here in Nevada. NACWIC does not have a position on this issue, on whether counties should engage in the lawsuits or not. However, we have talked about it, and we do have some information we can provide, so I just wanted to give you to talk about a few things. Basically, there are cases in both federal and state courts. Those federal cases have been consolidated in Ohio, and every county in the U.S. has now been included in that case. I believe that's, and I don't want to steal the thunder from your DA, but that's the question that you'll be talking about next on your agenda, about whether you will choose to opt out from that federal case or whether you are going to stay in. If you do opt out, you have to do so by November 22nd. If you do stay in, opted into the federal case, that removes your ability to participate in a state case if you did decide you wanted to file in state court. The majority of Nevada's counties have filed in state court, and I believe will make the choice to opt out or have already opted out of the federal lawsuit. They're calling it a negotiation class. The expectation, part of the reason for this, is that any settlement to address the impacts to your county from the opioid epidemic, for example, to emergency services, would be larger from a state settlement than from that national settlement. The projected numbers for counties from that national settlement are very small. I don't know if you took a look. There's a calculator that you can, you know, put in your county, and I would guess it's, you know, 10 grand, 20 grand, something like that for Story County. So, anyway, I'd be happy to answer any questions about that or during your next agenda item if that would be helpful or appropriate. One final issue I wanted to just plug, and I know you guys have already been talking about this, is the 2020 U.S. Census. As you all know, an accurate count is very important to all counties, small and large. It could determine how many representatives that we have in Congress, and potentially we could get another representative here in Nevada, depending on how our count comes out. Also, the allocation of federal funds. So for those taxes we send to D.C., what comes back to us? About $2,000 per person comes back to Nevada. And if there is an undercount, then that's $2,000 that we lose, you know, and some of those for county grants and programs for every person that is not counted. Also, in terms of your legislative representation, redistricting is coming up. So rural representation will also depend on how those numbers come out, as well as your C-tax distribution, so an important source of revenue for counties. It's important to note that Nevada has one of the highest rates in the country of what they call hard-to-count census tracts that are traditionally undercounted, and that's just as true for our rural areas as our urban areas. So in consideration of this, we recommend that every county does implement a complete count committee. I believe that you guys are already on the ball or that your commission is going to act as that committee take up efforts to try to promote participating in the census in your county so that you know there are some grant dollars available from the state to support you in those efforts. There's also staff that the state is hiring. The state's hiring, I think, two dedicated rural folks to help with census outreach. And there's a U.S. Census employee whose contact information I can give you who is working and can support you guys on your census efforts as well. Finally, the governor has a state-level complete count committee, and I am the county representative on that committee. So if you have any questions or need any support on census stuff, just reach out to me, and that's something I could help you out with as well. Thank you. That's our office in Carson City. I believe you've all been there. Stop by any time. And that is our contact information.
That's great. Thank you, Ms. Stapleton. Did you want to say this?
Other than thanking her very much, it's been an interesting year with NACO, and you guys are exceptionally busy. And thank goodness that we have the watchdogs that we do. The counties would be paying quite a penalty if you guys weren't out there. So our staff at NACO is incredible. I enjoyed getting acquainted.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. Any other questions? Anything I can address? Okay.
No, I mean, but, thank you. I've been going to Nevada NACO since I've been elected to this position, and you and your team, your whole staff, always do a fine job, and the programs that you put together for the workshops and continued education for all of us in government. So we always appreciate what the Nevada branch of NACO does. So thank you very much.
Thank you. I'm proud to do it.
So for those of us of you in the audience today who aren't too familiar with how procedure is and our meetings here, is that after every agendized item, we go ahead and we give you the opportunity to go ahead and make a public comment. So anybody who'd like to make a public comment regarding what you just heard is welcome to do so. We always ask everyone to keep their comments to 3 minutes. And we do this after each agendized item. And if there's nothing you want to speak about now, at the end of the meeting, you have the opportunity to make a public comment also on anything that was not agendized for today. So we have a pretty full room today, which is good to see. We don't see this very often. So thank you, everybody who's in attendance today. So with that, we'll go ahead and we'll move on to the next item, which is item number 10. This discussion of possible action regarding whether to opt out or remain in the negotiation class in the national prescription opiate litigation case number 1:17-MD-2804 pending the United States District Court in the Northern District of Ohio. Mr. Loomis.
Keith Loomis, District Attorney's Office. Ms. Stapleton has said, there is a case pending in the Northern District of Ohio in which the federal district court judge has created what he has termed a negotiation class consisting of all the cities and counties in the United States. That's approximately 33,000 cities and counties that are now participants in that negotiation class. It's a voluntary process. You don't have to participate in it if you don't want to. If you choose to withdraw from it, then you have to file the notice of withdrawal with the district court. Now, it's called a negotiation class, which is the first time it's ever been done. And then what it provides is that the members of the class have the right to, through their representatives, to negotiate a settlement with the opioid manufacturers and distributors. In order to approve a settlement, 75% of the cities and counties have to vote in favor of a settlement, which leaves the authority to enter into the settlement with the cities and counties. It is subject to approval by the court. If you choose to opt out, there is separate litigation that is being conducted by a number of cities and counties in the state of Nevada. Most of them are going through the Eglett Adams Law Firm, and I have been in contact with that firm. They are interested in representing Story County if Story County is interested in having representation. I asked them to send me a retainer agreement so I could see what the terms of that agreement would be. And what it provides is that the law firm would take 25% of the any settlement funds that are received in the state of Nevada. They will also take back from that settlement the costs that they incur in pursuing the litigation. They are not asking the counties or the cities to provide money so that they can pursue the litigation. They will front that money and then will get it back if there is a settlement. So there is not a financial risk to the county, but it's uncertain, as is the national litigation. There is a provision in the national litigation. They have a kind of a hypothetical which states that this is how much you would receive under the national settlement if a settlement is reached, which takes three characteristics. One is the number of people with opioid disorders in the county, the number of opiate deaths in the county, and the number of opiate pills that are distributed in the county. And under their calculator, if the class reaches a $1 billion settlement, the amount of the county share would be approximately $10,300. I would think that the $1 billion is probably a very low settlement amount. The tobacco litigation was somewhere in the area of $240 billion. But that is the hypothetical result that would occur if there's a national settlement.
I think another element, Keith, if I'm not mistaken, is that the research and development of the county's position and the impacts that the county has had will be funded and furnished by the law firm of Las Vegas. So we don't have to put a team on the ground to do all of that research. They'll come in and do it for us, and again, there's no charge.
That's true, and if they do use county staff, the county is entitled to bill the firm for the costs of county staff. I did talk to Steve Rye in Lyon County about what kind of burden they've experienced as a result of participating in that litigation. And he said, up to this point, very little, but they're just starting that process.
My understanding is that the county would be in line for a significantly larger award were we to go the independent side, but I suppose that's a crystal ball.
That is speculation, yes. I think some of the theories that are out there in terms of why there's going to be liability on the part of the opioid manufacturers are new theories. When you try new theories, if you get a result, you may be in appeals for a period of time also.
Do we have a feel yet for the impacts of the opioid crisis in Story County specifically?
Well, not really, no. The figures that the negotiation class provided are based on three national surveys that have been done in terms of opioid disorders presence across the country, and that's broken down by counties, the number of opioid overdose deaths, and the number of prescription pills that are prescribed within a county. And that's based on the national figures at this point.
I understand there's something about ambulance trips, perhaps, and they look at some other criteria of the impacts.
They don't in the hypothetical way that they came up with the figures. I have heard that, you would look at first responders, but in this case, the first responder is the Fire Protection District, which is a separate political entity. They are not going to be included in the negotiation class.
Participation of the law firm on the private side would be about 25%?
Yes.
Of the award?
Yes.
Commissioner Carmona, do you have some thoughts on this?
I have a lot of thoughts on it, but nothing I need to ask Keith right now.
All right. My concern on this is that if we don't have a way to track, when this was brought to us, it says what the Story County's damage is, we may have incurred. And I don't know if there's any way for us to track what our damages are. Without having a hospital, if we had a hospital, it'd probably be a good way of having some statistics on what it costs the county for damages that are incurred by this opioid crisis. Without having that type of information and not knowing if we have any actual damages or not, for us to go forward and stay in with this litigation, it looks to me like it'd be the county just looking for some free money down the road. If we didn't incur any damages, but we're going to accept settlement money, I think we'd have to look at, are we rightfully, you know, should we rightfully accept that type of money?
If I'm not mistaken, we would rely on this Eglett Adams law firm to do the research and analysis to see what the impacts might have been within Story County.
In my discussion with that firm, they said they have an expert that will come out and do the research on behalf of the county, but would probably interview county officials and employees to try to come up with some type of figure. But like I say, the county can then build a law firm for the use of county staff.
And there would be no cost to us specifically for that research and development.
That's correct.
Yeah. I generally feel that the private law firm route makes a lot of sense, but that's... From what I've gleaned in the research and analysis, I've had a lot of feedback back from the law firm, Eglin. And my general opinion is it would be wise to opt out and go the private route.
How about if we take some public comment and see what these folks have to say in the audience? Mr. Ayers. And then Mr. Sean, after that, I see you're starting to get up.
Hi, Steve, our local. How are you going to spend the money? Either way you go.
You're putting the cart before the horse here. We haven't even got to that point, so.
Okay, but it's kind of an important question because I heard a comment made that the county will get all this money, and it seems like this addiction needs to go back to the people that are addicted, and whether it's health rehab, whether you donate the money to a community chest or whatever to help people with their opiate addictions, something like that needs to be done because you're talking about maybe $10,000.
It wasn't a lot of money. They were estimating about $10,500, so it's not a lot of money.
I understand that.
Looking at the damage that are incurred to the county, not to the individuals. The individuals who end up having problems, they're the ones who cause the damages to the county by usually indigent, you know, health care or something like that.
Yeah, but no, that's why it goes back to the opiate companies because they know they're the ones causing the problems.
Right.
All the money that comes out of them should go back to rehab, and that's why I'm asking the question.
Well,
you guys need to think about putting that money to rehab, I think.
Yeah. Okay, thanks.
And there, eliminate the problem.
Or try.
Never be eliminated.
For the record, Eric Schoen of Community Chest, and I speak in my role as a mental health and substance abuse addictions professional. I teach at University of Nevada, Reno, an addictions minor program, as well as I've written a textbook on addictions that we use in our classroom. I also participate in the multidisciplinary team here in Story County. And in answer to your question of what the impact is, usually a team is a representative from the fire department, law enforcement, senior services, ourselves from Community Chest, and maybe an assortment of other folks. And what we're seeing primarily is that opioid use disorders in Story County seems to be relegated mostly to seniors who've been prescribed opiates, and then they are reluctant to come forward because they've been using opioids to control pain, but it becomes an issue when they're cut off from their opioids and or they're mixing those with other pharmaceuticals. So in Story County, the impression is, for those of us who are working on the ground, that the primary hit is to seniors who have been prescribed opioids. So in terms of a remedy for us, what we're trying to do, we already have employed a community health worker who makes contact with folks who are referred to the senior services programs or through the jail. And that person makes contact with them in their homes or in the jail and tries to develop a care plan to connect them with the necessary resources. The issue is, number one, she only has a limited amount of time. Number two, it's developing trust amongst seniors that they won't lose any independence or they won't lose the ability to make other choices should they decide to work with the community health worker. So for us, what we're trying to do is make sure we have somebody who's available to meet with people when they're identified or when they ask for help. But that's, for us as a team, and Stacy, correct me if I'm wrong, that's the number one impact that we're seeing from opioids, the use of opioids in Story County. So I just wanted to provide that context. So there is some impact. I think the impact primarily is loss of vitality for the seniors as they use opioids. You know, you basically lose vitality. I think number two, it's increasing response time by the fire department, by senior services, by our personnel. So that's where you're seeing the cost in the county.
Do we have a lead at all coming out of our veterans groups here? I understand that the veterans community has probably been hit as hard as anybody else in this opioid abuse.
Agreed. So are you asking, do we have a contact with the veterans?
Yes.
Representative Stacy Dewey? No. Does that help? Do you guys have any questions about that?
Well, my thought is I'm just wondering if we had to let some of our team leaders come back in 2 weeks and let us know if we can find some actual damages, whether or not we should decide whether we want to opt in or out of this litigation.
We have until the 22nd to
right.
make the decision.
And our next meeting would be on the 19th. So that would give us adequate time.
If it would help, we could try to do some back napkin estimates and see if there's any other ways that we can get some numbers for you from our multidisciplinary team partners. That would be helpful. Or maybe you're already doing that, Commissioner.
And I would recommend that we take a look at our veterans groups here in the community.
Yeah.
I believe they've had more impact than anybody generally.
You want to weigh in?
We have the next meeting is on the 19th, so we can certainly take the time to look into it further. We have to either withdraw or stay by the 22nd.
Okay.
And my understanding, Keith, there would be real no financial impact either choice to the county. Would that be correct?
That would be correct.
Okay. That's it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would ask Keith, if Eric and his group, which is technically not part of the county, who are really the experts, as Mr. Schoen has just said, can they be part of the investigatory process by these folks?
I don't see any problem with doing that, no.
Yeah, we'd be happy to participate. However, I wanted to provide a broader context because I heard the question, how really do opioids affect Story County? And it's really in the way that I just related. For seniors.
Sure. You can provide a little bit more information to us before the next meeting so that we can come in here better prepared to make a decision.
We'll certainly try.
Sure. Thank you, Eric. Additional public comment? So with the legal counsel suit, motion in order to go ahead and continue this to the November the 19th.
Maybe. I think that's an order, yes.
Do you make a motion to continue this to November the 19th?
I'll move to continue this agenda item to the 19th of November. Make a decision in that meeting.
I'll second.
We move to the second. Continues to the 19th. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Great.
Let me add one other thing, in that a representative of that Eglett Adams law firm would be happy to appear and provide further information. Maybe they can do that on the 19th also.
Okay. That'd be fine. Thank you, Mr. Loomis. Move along now to item number 11. This is a public hearing. We're taking no action. This is to hear any objections to a proposed lease of the county property at 1705 Peru Drive to the TRI General Improvement District.
This is our
government facilities building in the industrial park, which we house the fire department and public works and the Nevada Highway Patrol and various others over the course of the years. Mr. Loomis.
Keith Loomis, District Attorney's Office. This is a requirement under 277.050 where we propose to lease county property to another governmental entity. At the last meeting, we provided for publication of the fact that we were going to potentially engage in a lease with the TRI GID. That was published in the newspaper. It requires that there be a public hearing at which electors of the county are authorized to provide any objections they might have to that lease.
Thank you, Mr. Loomis. So at this time, I'll ask if there's anybody here who has objections to this lease from the county for the GID. Anybody have any other comments regarding this action item or non-action item? Okay. Then we will continue on to item 12 then. This is discussion of possible action, consideration of possible approval of resolution 19-560, approving the lease of county-owned property at 1705 Peru Drive to the TRI General Improvement District, and authorizing the chairman to sign said lease.
Having held the public hearing, we are now authorized to move ahead with making a determination of whether to actually enter into the lease or not. And as I stated at the last meeting, basically the provisions of the lease are going to lease about approximately 460 square feet of space at the county facility on Peru Drive to the TRIGID. We have figured out a basic rental amount of $900 a month, which is roughly equivalent to the amount, the square footage amount that we charge Ames when they were in there. The GID proposes to make tenant improvements of a value of about $12,000 that will remain with the property upon vacation of the premises by the GID. That was also something that, and we would credit the cost of those tenant improvements against the rental amount. That was also something that we did with Ames, with the Ames group. The lease is for 2 years with an extension of up to another 2 years. Is that right, Sherry? Is that what we have here? Okay, and this is Sherry Whalen. She's the general manager of the TRIGID at this point.
Okay.
Commissioner Gilman, I think you recused yourself last time on the deliberation of this.
I'm not sure that I need to recuse on this item. I don't have a pecuniary interest in the issue. But I certainly, in an abundance of caution, could do so.
I my personal opinion on it is that it's a very remote, it's not a substantial impact, and I think you're entitled to stay if you choose to, but it's not a requirement.
Okay. Any questions for Keith? All right. Is there any public comment regarding this resolution?
Chris Thompson.
Mr. Thompson.
Bless you.
Hard to see.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, commissioners, Mr. County Manager, Mr. Deputy DA, Chris Thompson, Project Manager, Tahoe Reno Industrial Center. I just want to take this opportunity, Mr. Chairman, for those that haven't met her, is Sherry Whalen in the suit and the red shirt here is our new general manager, just hired at the General Improvement District. This lease would be for her to operate the GID general manager's office out of, which would be a great location for it. Sherry comes to us from, she was formerly the public works director for the city of Fernley. So she's got great experience there. She was also a city councilwoman for the city of Fernley, and she is an engineer. And so her credentials are just impeccable. And she's sharp. She's been in the job now for a couple months already. She was hired with input from county and from members of the public throughout Story County. So we feel very lucky to have her and very grateful that she accepted with the position with the GID. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Ms. Thompson. Any additional public comment? Okay, before I go ahead and call for a motion on this, I'll read the title to the resolution. Before I get struck with you by legal counsel. Consideration and approval of Resolution 19-560, approving the lease of county-owned property at 1705 Peru Avenue to the TRIGID and authorizing chairman to sign said lease. I get a motion to that.
Hi, Lance Gilman. Move to approve Resolution 19-560. Which approves the lease of county property to the TRIGID and authorized the chairman to sign the resolution and the proposed lease.
I'll second.
Been moved to second to approve Resolution 19-560. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Moving along now to item number 13. This will be a workshop. We won't take any action. This is a public workshop to discuss and receive comments on the proposed draft extension and modification of the franchise agreement between Story County and Waste Management. So, Mr. Osborne?
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll just give an introduction here and then kind of pass it over to you for what it's intended to be as a non-action workshop. In this case, we felt appropriate because this is an agreement that not only is between the county and a trash pickup provider, but it's an agreement that will affect everybody in the county as far as what goes on at their curbside for trash pickup and the rates that they pay for services. So at this point, I'm just recommending we do a workshop, no action, and we'll see what comments are brought at this meeting, and then we can bring it to the next meeting for consideration if appropriate. Some of the background in 2009 was when the existing franchise agreement we're under right now was approved by the board. It expired on 10/30/19. It was extended by this board until 11/31/19 in order to continue negotiations between the two parties. Within the last 12 or so months, there's been study, comp studies, comparison of our agreement and the proposed potentials between us, City of Reno and Sparks, Washoe County, Carson City, Douglas County, Lyon County, Churchill, which is free market, but still looking at what they charge, and others in the region. That has kind of enabled us to really set the groundwork for what we believe is, you know, the regional comparison for pickup services, for services that are provided, et cetera. And I should also ask, the Canyon GID was also studied with their franchise agreement. Lockwood has their own separate agreement with Waste. After the review and bargaining back and forth, Marshall and I met with Greg Martinelli and his team at Waste Management. During the negotiation process, I had met also with several other providers of trash services and recycling services, just to kind of hear any thoughts that come our way, whether they're left, right, or indifferent, or in the middle, or whatever. So for this, I prepare, if you would like, a summary sheet of just a little bit of a snapshot of what our current agreement is and what the proposed agreement under this draft right now may look like. And I have enough for the public. And this has got a lot of stuff in it, but it's not that long of a document.
Thank you.
So what this chart is, it should just take a moment to go through. I'm not going to go into detail on everything. I'll hit the highlights, and if anybody would like to discuss further, it's what we're here for. So it starts off as article. This would be the subject item in the agreement that currently exists. So in the middle is the 2009 contract. That's the one we're under right now. And the one on the right is the draft 2019 contract. The duration of the current contract is 5-year and renewable. What the duration under the proposed is up to the board. It would either be a 5-year, an 8-year, or a 10-year. As you will see online, all of this material is posted on the planning website, and all of the postings have led folks to the planning website that has all this analysis as well as the draft agreement. The longer the term, the lesser the rates. But what we're concerned is a longer term, there could be risks. We may not have thought of something. There may be something that could be an issue. And we'd be stuck for a 10-year term. We prefer a 5-year term. Waste prefers an 8-year term or a 10-year term. And the rates are accordingly. The longer you're with them, the less it goes. Fees to the customer. There's a chart on both of them. The only thing that will happen under the situation if we go with a new contract is this year there would be no consumer price index increase for 1 year, so that's kind of part of the process of trying to negotiate rates for the customers. And then after that, there would be a CPI index increase every year, similar to the existing contract that we have. Dump tonnage fees for the county, this means the garbage that goes across the scales down at Lockwood Landfill remain at 3%. They're not affected by this agreement because it's under a special use permit. The franchise fee from the county or from the company right now is 5%. So that means that of all of the rates that are paid across the county, commercial, industrial, et cetera, we get 5% cut that goes into the general fund. Under the new agreement, it would be an 8%. All of the region is either 8 or 10%. Most of them are 8. County service charge, that means services to Story County for C Street and for government buildings, is 0% on both of them. The school district under the current agreement pays 50% garbage fees. Under the new agreement would pay 0%. C Street service is both 0, and the new contract adds B Street, which is Piper's Opera House garbage can. Mandatory service, this is a big one for the public. We have said we will not, under the direction of this board, be a mandatory service county. We want to remain a rural county and act like a rural county. So we would be the last of this region being non-mandatory service under both contracts. So that will not change. As far as cans and carts, right now you have an option to have what I call a Home Depot, you know, Rubbermaid garbage can, or one of Waste Management's 96-gallon typical green cart that you see all over towns. Under the new agreement, you would have an option for a 32-gallon Home Depot special, a 50, a 64, a 96, and be able to add a yard to a 32-gallon can. We do have a yard to a 32-gallon can now. It's kind of like put your garbage bag next to your garbage can, and it would be the same rate. The new contract would have an overage pickup fee. That means if you have a dumpster or you have a garbage can with a lid hanging 12 inches in the air with overstuffed garbage, they would charge a fee for that. That is the typical thing that's happening in the region. And then having garbage next to the dumpster, they would charge extra for the garbage next to the dumpster. Their theory is if you pay for a four-yard dumpster, you get 4 yards worth of service. Senior discount under the current contract, and it's not 100% easy to determine this, but 5% generally for a 32-gallon, what I call the Home Depot special can. Under the new one for a 32-gallon can, it comes out to 25%. I need to look at those numbers again, so I want to disclaim that before the next meeting. We now would have a senior low-income discount, where in the current contract that does not exist. Under the new contract, that would be a 25% discount for what's called a 64-gallon cart. That's like the big green one, but just a little bit smaller, but bigger than the Home Depot special. Canyon GID, we have reached out, or I've reached out to the Canyon GID to see if they would like to participate in the county's franchise agreement. They have said, you know, well, if it comes out to our benefit, maybe. So we've had language in this contract that if the GID would like to join this this agreement, we could bargain them in, but this is 100% up to the Canyon GID. We're not encouraging and, you know, trying to get them to or whatever. I think the only real benefit to the GID would be they have a little bit lesser rate than our draft contract that's coming, so they're probably better off staying where they are. But our contract allows the Home Depot 32-gallon can, where the Canyon does not. They have to get the big cart. I know there's a lot of seniors that live in Lockwood that I can't imagine could fill one of those carts in a year, let alone every month. So they might benefit by being able to do the Home Depot special and drop their one little bag of garbage in it every week and not have to have that big cart. That's about the only difference. Transfer station is one of the biggest things are happening here. Is in Virginia City and Lockwood right now. What we have is Saturday service. No. Fluids and oils, no. E-waste, no. Recycling at no charge, yes. Under the new agreement for the transfer stations, it would be for Saturday service, yes. Fluids and oils, yes. E-waste, electronics, yes. Recycling at no charge, yes. And we would add the Highlands to have a large container out there where people could put recycling into that container at no charge. So it would probably be a big dumpster with a hole in it where they shoot the cans and the bottles, that kind of thing, out in the Highlands. And there's some expansions for senior, for Lockwood folks to be able to go to the Lockwood landfill. We are trying to do as much in this agreement with the Lockwood community, despite them being in their own franchise. We're putting language in here that they can use the landfill services. Saturday service, they do have Saturday at the landfill, at the transfer station now, but it's not written into the agreement that it must be. The new one it is. Highlands and Comstock staffing, what this is, the problem, is the garbage service on the Comstock and the Highlands is Monday. We always order snow on Saturday night. It seems to be that way, or Sunday night. So then the truck goes out to the Highlands. It can't hit three or four roads, and then they're done for the week. So this would be a situation where they have a special driver up here that would spend 3 days on the Comstock, be able to go out to the Highlands, and if they can't get to, you know, Sazerac or whatever it is on Monday because of snow, they can try to hit it Tuesday or Wednesday and be able to get that fix in place. Then that person that would operate the transfer station up here and the recycle bin out at the Highlands on those days. So it's kind of like a designated snow district route, if you want to call it that. Speaking of missed snow days, I just talked about that. Rights to collect the recycling. This is the biggest item we're under right now, and we're still fine-tuning. I wouldn't even say that. We're wordsmithing language between waste and us. Waste management has a problem with loose, contaminated recycling being not subject to the franchise agreement. Currently, it is not. What they are saying happens is I'm a company.
I have waste come over with the green bin for all my garbage, and the green bin is, let's just say, $1,000, a very large bin. And then Blue Bins Incorporated, which does not exist, I'm making that up, they show up and said, we'll give you the same bin, we're going to paint it blue, and it's $90, and you put recycling in it. That sounds great. I tell waste to go away, Blue Bins comes in, and then I, in turn, go ahead and throw all my garbage in there. It's not even recycling, it's just garbage. And then Blue Bins goes and takes that garbage to the Churchill landfill, and it's really not recycling. So I met with the recycling folks in the region with waste on this matter, and it seems that the recyclers want to not have in this agreement what we call authentic, true recycling. That would be that a company is going to bail, and they're going to maintain 95% clean recycling, plastic, whatever material it is, and then a company can come and take that away, or that company can go ahead and move it on their own to California or wherever where they have true recycling occurring. In Nevada, we don't have really the facilities. That's the goal here. And I'm happy, and I think that'll probably be a lot of the discussion in today's workshop, and I think there'll be opportunity. So I'll go on to the next one unless you want me to stop. Better access to Lockwood at the LCC is another big item. I call it Lower and Upper Bench Road. In reality, it's called Canyon Way, but it's not really Canyon Way. But if you go into the LCC, there's a bench road that Waste Management says they can't get the large trucks down and back up. So we worked with Jason W. and our Public Works team with Waste Management's engineer to come up with a turnaround that would be needed. If we agree to this, then the county would ask the LCC to provide us an easement to go and develop the end of that Canyon Way segment or Upper Bench Road, if we want to call it that, and then the Waste Management would be able to get their truck in there to make a back turnaround and then get back out and continue to provide residential service on that bench road, where currently it does not. So that would be in here as well. Customer service is another big area. Waste has agreed with our negotiations to create a website where people can go and look at schedules, can file complaints, talk to an online representative. And then in addition to this, there would be a local ombudsman, can never say that word, ombudsman, that is a local representative that's in the Reno, Sparks, or Carson City area that they could reach and say, hey, you missed my garbage or my billing didn't get done right or whatever. They don't get stuck into the automated machine of corporate management. Animal-resistant containers is expanded. Better phone customer service, illegal dump site to the county. They would provide 6 services of illegal dump areas that we find at no charge to the county. Come pick that up. Holiday tree pickup at curbside is added. Overflowing cart bin charge, I told you about that earlier, would be added. Audit requirements are greatly enhanced. Performance bond is enhanced. And annual increase for trash is based on a consumer price index. And they're using the trash and garbage index nationwide. And then last, I told you about the 5-10 and 8-year potential agreement. And then everything, again, is posted on the website. You can go to just Story County, go to planning, go to updates. It'll take you right to it. And then that's where we are at this point. No action. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Thank you, Austin. Since this is a workshop, we'll go ahead and anybody who would like to come up and speak, make a comment or ask questions, that's what we're here for today. So who would like to start? Come on up. So if you would and identify yourself for the record for us, please.
Yes, my name is Nate Lance, and I run a roll-off company in Reno called Rubbish Runners. I just wanted to speak a little bit to what Mr. Osborne was talking about, the Blue Bin Company.
There's no Blue Bin Company.
Yeah, we're one of those Blue Bin Companies. Okay. So that is not exactly an accurate representation of what we do. We will go in, provide a bin for a customer. They put their recyclables in there. We take it to a separate transfer station. Those recyclables then get pulled out. And if there is some other material that we would consider trash, then that would be considered landfill. Typically, we're diverting about 80% of what brings in to our facility to be used as recyclables. So that for us to say that we're just doing that to undercut waste and then we just take it to Churchill County and it gets thrown away is just not an accurate statement. I guess what I'd like the commission to consider is to do some workshops to take a look at keeping recycling open. Out of Trek, we work with a company out there called Ardow. We have pretty much taken them to almost a zero landfill, which is really impressive. So with what they're doing there, we've almost got them down to zero landfill, and that's through us, by diversion and in students of recycling programs. So that's basically it.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Dear Mr. Chairman, if you'll mind, I really want to make it clear for the record, I'm certainly not pointing to your company or any specific company in any statements about practices, and I owe for this point forward call it yellow bin. I didn't realize there was a blue bin out there, but that was not the point of that. Thank you. And I do want to point out that Waste Management's team is here as well.
Come on up.
We're back after you sit there a little while, you know?
For the record, my name is Eddie Lorden, and I'm involved in Reno politics. And I would hope that this commission wouldn't make the same mistakes Reno has. A while back, you had another roll-off company or a company that was Castaway, and he sued Sparks over them trying to control recyclables for a commercial, okay? And he won. And Reno is the king of getting sued all the time. They've had nothing but problems when they ended up trying to do this recycling deal with Reno. But notice how Sparks doesn't do it, the county doesn't do it, because they're smart. So they allow free enterprise and encourage recycling, which we should do in this day and age. So I didn't want to see you get caught in the middle. If you end up trying to control commercial recycling, then you're going to be the enforcer. A lot of problems Reno had also was the fact that, you know, because, you know, if you have two companies, notice how they want to have you throw it in one bin, but they'll have the other companies in Reno have three or four bins, one for rubber, one for plastic, so they'll make you do all these things. So in the end, it's not customer friendly. So they have the advantage in the end for a business advantage to make it, you know, more convenient. People are going to do that. So what they've done is they made it this way because they can't control all of the recycling, and it's against the federal law to control commodity pricing and stuff like that. So what we've gotten into is notice how Sparks in the county doesn't do it, just Reno, and they get sued all the time. But now they're stuck in enforcement because then Waste will say these other companies have more contamination, and then all of a sudden you got citizens that have been threatened with jail time and get fines and all these things. So you're stuck in the middle enforcing. So that's kind of a problem that will be coming up in the future that Reno's already been through, and you can research all that. So now I ended up, I want you to realize the control you have. You guys control the landfill. That's their bread and butter. So you can make deals beyond, like sometimes when they're exporting waste from California and stuff, you can up that rate. Here's other ways for you to make money. And then if you keep it open for recyclers, like there's lots of companies that do it, they have substantial accounts out there, and they'll still pay the 8% as well. So you won't lose money on these other companies, and they actually care more about recycling than Waste does, because there's been accusations before with Waste that a lot of times when commodity prices are low, hits the landfill. No one's controlling that. And in the end, these littler companies are local. They answer their phone. They're here. They're happy to do recycling to make extra money, which that's the goal, especially in tri-centers. These people want to be green. And so that's what they're going to be pushing with the smaller companies. So on the old contract, they didn't have any of the commercial recyclables involved, and now they're trying to just expand. That's what the giant does. So I'm hoping you can consider letting these smaller companies still do business with the people they do out there and not even get involved, up their rate, but think about when they export waste to even up that rate for the landfill. But let these other smaller companies do business with commercial recycling only and leave it out of the contract like was in the first contract that you're considering renewing. And now let me look at any more of this. So let's see here. So, yes, so that's my final conclusion. If you leave it the way it was, add the extra percentage, but stay out of the commercial end of recycling, and everybody will pay the same, and it's fair business, and they don't get an unfair advantage in the market. So thank you for your consideration. Appreciate it.
Okay, who's next? Ms. Bard.
Nicole Bart, Story County resident. I want to support the position of the prior two speakers. I think that, from my understanding, is we're locked in with waste management to not be able to use any other supplier or service to pick up our garbage. We're already locked in. Once we do a contract with them, they won't allow anyone else in the county. With the recycling, I think that with the technology that is constantly being driven on how to deal with recycling, I think that the smaller players are more nimble and able to take advantage of that technology and are hungry enough to figure out ways to do it that doesn't cost them money, but that provides a better service. And so, as always, I am pro-free enterprise, and I would support allowing that to happen, and I would even like to have it happen to where we can cut a contract with waste management, but allow room if I, as a homeowner, want to use someone else to come and haul my stuff, that I should be able to do that. And right now, under waste management, I can't. I don't have a choice. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Thompson.
Mr. Chairman, Chris Thompson, Tahoe Reno Industrial Center. I think I'd just like to support part of the prior two comments, and the Lord struck me down for supporting anything that the prior speaker just said, but for the first time maybe ever. But I think with the proposed agreement, TRI has got a lot of companies that are publicly traded, they're global leaders, and environmental excellence is really important to them. And for the developers that are in the park now, of which there's a number of them, that have land that has not been built on, their ability to attract other top businesses is, I think, not dependent, but it's really impacted on the environmental responsibility of the county and the industrial park. And I think anything in this agreement that handcuffs or restricts or makes it more difficult for a recycler to do business in TRI with these companies, I think ought to be a really powerful negative on the agreement. I'd encourage the agreement to keep out recycling from the franchise as it does, but eliminate anything in there that ties one hand behind their back on doing business. There are a lot of companies out there now that are recycling specialists. It's what they do. Nobody knows where the recycling market's going to go in the future. It's a tough market right now, but that could very well change in the near future. And I believe that the companies in TRI would be almost unanimously for anything that enhances the ability to do very high-quality recycling. The other thing we've heard is, you go around the county to the various neighborhoods, and I think that the service to Lockwood and to Mark Twain and to the surrounding communities is an important factor in terms of, we hear a lot down in Lockwood of dissatisfaction. I know the county manager's been all over it, and I know that's why he's been focusing on that in the negotiation, but we really support him on that. These people, given the fact that a lot of them are going month to month on Social Security checks, a lot of them don't have the ability to move their garbage down the street or move heavy loads of garbage from time to time. I think the more we can enhance those services in those outlying communities, the better. And I would encourage folks on that in the negotiations. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Mr. Nevin. We'll do Mary Lee, and then we'll do Mike.
Marilyn Miller from that Lockwood community. I also want to point out to you that many times over the last 4 years, I have had to call a contact at the waste management in Reno. If I couldn't get him, I called the contact at the dump, and then he drove in there. They brought in trucks over and over and over again that dropped their hydraulic fluid this wide up and down a lot of our streets until they wouldn't run and they had to bring a tow truck for them. They had to bring hazmat. They had to bring hazmat in to clean it up. So you need to ask them what they're going to, what type of equipment they're going to
use.
Hold
on a minute, Marilee. Hold on a second.
What type of equipment they're going to use in the country. Well, they don't have any backups out there, and sometimes it takes them 3 days because the second truck they bring does the same thing as the first. So it's not just picking it up. It's the equipment that they're using in our area to pick it up with a lot of times. There's a lot of oil on our streets this week as we speak, but I didn't make a call because it wasn't this wide, and I wasn't home when they did it, so I couldn't say too much about it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mrs. Miller. Mike Nevin?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Mike Nevin, Virginia City resident, 174 North C Street. I would certainly recommend the consideration by the board or the people that are putting together the new agreement to seriously consider maybe the expansion of some county trash cans along C Street, especially on the north end of town. Not only during special events, but any time of the day now, even today, you'll notice cars probably parked down in my neck of the woods, the lot on the corner of D and Mill, and I'm constantly out there picking up other people's trash, and I think it's time that maybe, you know, a few more cans be added. I mean, I'm not an advocate of those cans being utilized for residential garbage purposes, but certainly for the visiting public that we have. I know it's kind of hard to control, but just a thought that I think you should consider. Thank you.
Thanks, Mike. That has been part of the conversation so far. Thank you. Okay, someone else had their hand up. Come on up.
Yeah, howdy, Commissioners. My name is Deborah Durden. I live in Virginia City. And as a disabled elderly senior girl, I'm not interested in what the cans look like. I'm not interested in who does the trash. I'm not interested in any of that. What my interest is that a lot of us are in fixed income, especially the elderly and disabled and veterans and seniors. And I don't think that any consideration should be given to increase the rate. I mean, maybe $2 or a week or whatever, whatever you guys decide. It may not seem like a lot, but it is. So I just don't think that that particular group of people, you know, 65 and over and disabled, et cetera, should have any rate increases. Just my thought.
Okay, thank you. Who's next? Mr. Martinelli?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioners, Greg Martinelli on behalf of Story County Sanitation and Waste Management. I'm at a bit of a disadvantage because I don't know what Austin handed out to you. So, if I may approach, Mr. Chairman.
We have one for the public.
So what I've handed out to you is I kind of wanted to go over a little bit, not that Austin didn't do a good job of kind of highlighting what we've been talking about for the past 6 months or so, But I just wanted to kind of list the things that have transpired in this agreement, what has led us to where we are today. The county had asked that we increase the franchise fees from 5 to 8%. The county's adamant about the subscription service. The agreement today is subscription. It remains subscription. In order to deal with some of the, primarily here in Virginia City, the issues with free dumps, is to we're going to provide vouchers to the county, which will allow the citizenry to use the transfer station whenever they like, as opposed to confining it to one particular weekend. That way, they can do it at their leisure whenever the transfer station is open, and it'll make life convenient for everybody. On the other side of the county, the same thing would apply. They can use the Lockwood landfill anytime that it's open. The county asked that we add Christmas tree pickup to our service offerings for the 2 weeks after Christmas. The Story County Schools, we increased the 50% discount that they had to 100%. We were asked to provide a low-income senior rate, which we did. We've laid out a plan for changing the way we staff Virginia City and the Highlands, just to deal with some of these weather issues that we had, where it seems like we do get a storm on Saturday or Sunday and the Monday services are impacted. There was a desire for some commingled recycling capability at the Virginia City Highlands Transfer Station. We'll work with the Homeowner Association out there to see what makes sense, what kind of size is needed, and that sort of thing. Lockwood was added as an additional drop-off location for certain of the recyclable items. The illegal dumping in Story County will provide six events per year where we'll go out once the county identifies an illegal dumping location where we'll clean that up. The county asked for some assistance on pricing in the event of a disaster, so we've added that to the rate sheet. We're going to be providing an ombudsman to deal with escalated customer issues. Bond language is being added to the agreement. Our ask is to create a commercial recycling zone in Tri. During the course of a 10-year agreement, as you can imagine, this was an RFP in 2009. Things get missed, things change, so we added a bunch of different service offerings for those customers that have unique disposal demands. It's not fair that everybody pays for somebody else's service if they have something unique gets thrown away, so we added ancillary services to deal with that. The rates for residential and commercial customers have been reduced, and the roll-off rates in the county have been increased, but they're still below market. So those are the highlights of what's transpired in the agreement. I guess I will somewhat disagree with the explanation that was given about what our ask is for a recycling zone. What we're trying to do is we're only trying to capture customers that want to recycle in the industrial park. We're not talking about anywhere else in Story County. We're only talking about in Tri. There's an exhibit that would be part of the franchise, which kind of lays it out from a border perspective of what we're looking like. We're only talking about services that are offered under the agreement. So a compactor service, a bin service, or a roll-off service. Or a cart service. We're not talking about water. We're not talking about pallets. We're not talking about widgets or any other specialty type of material. And even if you wanted to, you cannot regulate and prevent someone from selling their product to whoever they want to. It's not permissible. Now, I've been in this business a long time. There are a ton of experts. But I can assure you that there is a new, and Mr. Loomis can check this, there is a federal district court case in Reno that says that you as the county, you get to decide what is part of your waste stream. It's currently under appeal to the Ninth Circuit, but that's the federal court decision in Reno. So you can make that decision. That is the ask. As you know, in a contract, it's got to be good for both parties. Otherwise, it just doesn't make sense. So we've come to the table. We've brought a bunch of different offerings. We don't believe that this puts anybody out of business. We don't believe that this impacts anybody in any way, shape, or form. This is strictly providing to provide a service that the customers are asking for. Nothing more. The other thing about the timing of this is, and part of the reason we asked for the extension was we're trying to true up the billing schedule so that we don't have a proration when we bill the residential customers, which occurs in December. So, you know, one of the complaints was the calls, complaint, citizen complaint calls. Well, if we can eliminate some because somebody gets a 4-month bill or a 2-month bill, it creates phone calls as to how come my bill is less this month and that sort of thing. So that was another reason for asking you to extend it for 30 days. So we continue our discussions and also to true up the billing for the residential customers. And I don't think I have anything else. If you gentlemen have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
I have no questions this time.
Okay. I don't either, since I've been working with Austin and you, Greg, and your team. So okay. We're going to continue to work on this. And hope we can come back with something to offer the board.
One thing I will ask, and this is a legal thing, but it doesn't seem to me that the issue involving the changes proposed for access at the Canyon General Improvement District have anything to do with this agreement. I mean, we're happy to enter into an agreement, but I don't think that it belongs in this agreement. Since Canyon has its own contract, why would we put something having to do with service in Canyon GID into the Story County franchise for the balance of the county? So I'm happy to enter into an agreement. I just don't think that it belongs in this particular contract. And I will mention that, you know, you often get vilified with different things that you do or you don't do. And, you know, we came to Canyon with a proposal for some changes in services, offering different service levels, but the board just wasn't interested in making any changes. They just wanted to continue business as is. So that's the reason that contract looks the way it is. They didn't want to make any changes, and they have their own elected body, and that was their decision. So that's why that transpired that way. Thank you very much for your time.
Okay, I'll open it up for one more bite of the apple here. Anybody else has any comments to make?
I got a couple of responses.
Okay.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Since this is a workshop, I'll just respond to a couple things here just so we're with this as part of the conversation. There was a discussion on free market. One of the issues, and I've done a lot of research on this, I've worked with you as well, Mr. Chairman, talking with other jurisdictions, Carson City, they went through a lot of research on this. I've talked to other counties, other cities, other providers of both trash and recycling services, and my own literary research. And so a lot of things you get into with the just free market is I just want to choose anybody because I live in Virginia City, Ms. Barr lives in the Highlands as well. I want to be able to, you know, choose whoever. Not everybody wants to do this area. Tri-Center, everybody wants to do Tri. Everybody wants what's out there at a Tri because it's easy pickings. It's just a smorgasbord of material. To come up here, particularly the Highlands with the snow and the long distances between residences, and the very little trash that probably is generated in this area, it's just not desirable for that. If we went to free market, maybe we would have people want to serve those residences in the area. But when you look at those sorts of things, the reason you go through an agreement like this is to have on both sides of a party a consistent service to the taxpayers and the customers of the county to provide the transfer station services that a free market we would not have. If free market, you may not get a company that wants to service your house at any particular location, whether it's Virginia City, the Highlands, or other places in the county that are particularly remote. So that can be challenging in that. So that's why, you know, in this case, if you don't want waste management services under the current agreement for right now, you can decide to haul your own trash. And a lot of people do. They take their own to the transfer station or wherever they would like to take that. They don't have to have this service. A couple discussions. I will look on the D Street corner and the C Street expansions. There was a comment about fixed income and rate increases. The rate increases are posted online, but just to give you an idea, I'll give one. The current rate is $15.73 for a 32-gallon can. If there was a 5-year agreement, it would go up about $1 to $16. If it was an 8-year agreement, it would go down to $14. And if it was a 10-year agreement, it would be $14 and change. And then for the low-income senior, 65 and older, there is a 25% discount even to that. So the rate schedule that you're looking at here, part of the rate schedule to get the rates down is to get the customer coverage up. And how you get the customer coverage up is create a franchise agreement to try to create a situation where the, you know, whoever the winner is knows that they have a consistent and reliable customer base that they can prorate in the future what their costs and their benefits are. I did, and I'm sorry that I did not mention the free voucher. Thank you, Mr. Martinelli, for clarifying and adding to that. Right now we have our free dump days as we know them. Under the new agreement, we've asked them, why don't we do vouchers for everybody? So if you can't be there on free dump day, you can show up 3 days of your choice. And if you would like to scalp your tickets to your neighbor because they have a lot of garbage and you don't and they want to go 6 times, then they can go 6 times while you go 0 times. So we are, that is a major expansion in this. And then the other thing as far as Canyon GLD, and this will be my last, we understand that Canyon's under their own franchise agreement, but this board has given direction to staff to make the customer and the taxpayer of this county come out ahead in this agreement. And as far as I'm concerned and this board is concerned, I believe, is whether they're under their own franchise agreement or not. Yeah, we can't regulate then their own trash can cost, but we can try to get some general services at the Lockwood landfill for those folks at Canyon. Lockwood be able to go over and recycle, dump their own garbage. This upper bench road, yeah, it's probably outside our jurisdiction as far as the agreement goes. Under the new agreement, I think that should be in there. This board provided direction, take care of these people. We're taking care of them. And I think there's ways that we can bridge the gap in being able to provide certain services that really are good for the whole county, but particularly benefit the Canyon folks down there at Lockwood. Those are all the comments I have. Thank you.
Okay. Any additional comments from the commissioners? Okay. How about if we move on then to item number 14? This discussion of possible action, acceptance of grant of easement from Joyce and Larry Herzig across their property for the purpose of constructing, reconstructing, maintaining, repairing, and servicing a water pipe and related equipment. Mr. Northup.
Thank you, Commissioners. This is the second appearance of the Duck Hill Waterline easement relocation documents. First time they appeared was to gain approval of the form and content of the documents. I've since had the owners execute these documents, and so you will be approving the executed documents. And my understanding, and I'll defer to counsel, my understanding is that following an approval here, that a copy of these documents gets filed here in Story County, and the originals get returned to Thorndahl and Associates for them to record the easement in Washoe County.
Okay. Commissioners, have any questions regarding this? No. How about public comment? Public comment on this? Thanks, gentlemen. Thanks for coming up. Okay. I get a motion to approve.
I, Lance Gilman, move to approve resolution number 19-556, accepting a grant of easement from Joyce and Harry Herzig for the purposes stated above.
I'll second.
Move and second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously.
Thanks, sirs.
Thank you, Mike. Item number 15, discussion of possible action, acceptance of Sierra Nevada Construction as the apparent low bidder for the 2019 road rehabilitation project. Public Works Director, Mr. Wurzbecki.
Good morning, Chairman, Commissioners, County Manager, Deputy DA. What we have here is hopefully the bid acceptance for SMC is an apparent low bidder for a 2019 road rehab project that allows us to do approximately 4.5 miles of road. It'll be a total reconstruct, grind and repave down in Mark Twain on Huckleberry and Edith. And then it'll be a 2-inch mill and overlay on Alexandria Court and Tri, a Cape Seal on Ireland and Megabyte, and then a Type 3 rapid setting slurry on Venice, Denmark, and London. So their bid come in at $384,003.19. The second closest was A&K Earth Movers at $447,618. And the engineer's opinion of probable cost before we went out to bid was $631,199. So we're recommending S&C as a apparent low bidder at $384,003.19.
That's a pretty good price for a lot of work.
Yep.
Commissioners, have any questions for Jason? Is public comment regarding this item? Seeing none? I go ahead and get a motion to accept this low bid from SNC.
I, Lance Gilman, move to accept Sierra Nevada Construction as the apparent low bidder for the 2019 road rehabilitation project. This is for slurry chip seal on 6 roads in the Tahoe Reno Industrial Center and 2 full rebuilds in Mark Twain for $384,003.19.
I'll second.
Been moved and second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Thank you, Jason.
Thank you, guys.
All righty. Next up is item 16, discussion of possible action. Award of contract for propane delivery to county facilities. Mr. Northam.
Thank you, Commissioners. Mike Northam, Operations and Projects Coordinator, for the record. The board may remember a couple of meetings ago we brought in the bid results for gasoline and diesel delivery to the county, and we selected a low bidder, and that was carried forward. On the propane side, we actually received just the one bid, and so after investigating that, it turns out that a lot of the companies declined to participate in our bid, mainly because the county does not own our own tanks. And the idea that right after the award of a contract that some of these smaller companies would have to acquire and then install up to 33, 34 tanks across the county in a very short period of time was daunting for them. So staff is currently recommending we go ahead and accept the Ferrellgas bid for propane delivery. But I'm also preparing a cost estimate and a plan to for the county to purchase their own tanks, and we can either do it in a single year or year over year. One of the major reasons we would do this is that it would open competition up to smaller and a broader range of propane delivery companies, and it also opens up obviously opportunities for those smaller companies to be a part of that, but broadens the county's bid participation where we can get more competitive bidding on the propane side of things. So at this time, I'm suggesting that we go ahead and accept the Ferrellgas contract. It's for 1 year renewable up to 3 additional. During that time, the county could be purchasing county-owned tanks and getting them installed at various county locations. And at some point when we have our own tanks, we'd be able to go out to bid and, again, have greater, far greater participation than we've seen.
If the county were to purchase their own tanks, doesn't that increase the liability for the county? On the liability side and the maintenance of the equipment?
Well, you're going to have liability anyway. The tank is sitting there full of flammable gas.
If it's owned by somebody else,
you have some
maintenance. They have a liability issue if we own ourselves.
You could, sure, and your maintenance is going to be an additional cost because now it's our tank that we're paying a company to maintain. That is certainly true.
I know. Do we have people who are certified to go ahead and maintain propane? You know,
no, that would be outsourced. You don't have anybody on county staff that could do that. No, absolutely not. And they have to be certified year over year. So there are considerations to this, and that's part of that cost analysis that I'll be preparing for you.
Okay. All right. Commissioners, have any questions for Mike? Any public comment regarding this item? The motion to approve?
I'd like to Gilman move to award the contract for propane delivery to Ferrellgas for all county locations.
I'll second.
Been moved to second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Thanks,
Thank
Mike.
You.
Item number 17, discussion of possible action. Story County Proclamation for Flood Awareness Week, November 16th through the 22nd, 2019. Ms. Canfield.
Yes, good morning. Story County is a part of the National Flood Insurance Program, and that's administered by FEMA. And part of that program has to do with community outreach. Story County has been working with some local jurisdictions and with the state regarding flood awareness, and one of the items they have is Flood Awareness Week that's coming up November 16th through the 22nd. Staff is suggesting that the county be a part of that Flood Awareness Week, and Carlos Rendo, who's with the Public Outreach Manager from the Nevada Division of Water Resources, is also here and is coordinating various events that are going on during that week to share some of that with you.
Very good.
Hello, good morning, Commissioners.
Good morning. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. I'm here in support of Flood Awareness Week. Recently, we've been able to bring in the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers along with Carson Water Subconservancy District for the National Night Out event here in Virginia City. We'd like to be able to continue that yearly, and also for outreach plan, we're looking at going to Lockwood for the Lockwood Senior Center and Hillside Elementary School to continue doing flood outreach out in that location. And excited about the possibility of a proclamation for Story County. Thank you very much, Commissioners, for your time.
Great, thank you. Commissioners, have any questions? Anyone? No? Any public comment regarding this proclamation? Kathy, would you like to read the proclamation?
Sure. Whereas Story County recognizes the significant threat that flooding poses to our residents, our businesses, the community, the region, and our local economy, and whereas Story County has experienced flood events from the Truckee River, weather events, and flooding of local streams, channels, and creeks, and whereas risks can be reduced and communities can be prepared to be more aware and resilient by educating residents and businesses on actions they can take to prepare for flood events, and whereas during Flood Awareness Week, local, state, and federal agencies are working together across Nevada to inform the public about the dangers of flooding, how to protect their homes and families and businesses from flood event, and plan for recovery. Now, therefore, the Story County Board of County Commissioners does hereby proclaim November 16th through November 22nd as Nevada Flood Awareness Week, and urges all citizens to increase their awareness of risks of floods by visiting www.nevadafloods.org and learn how you can be prepared.
Okay. Thank you, Kathy. That's it. I get a motion to approve this proclamation.
I, Lance Gilman, move to approve Story County, Nevada proclamation for recognizing Flood Awareness Week, November 16th through the 22nd, 2019.
I'll second.
And moving to second, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Moving along now to number 18, we're going to recess the Story County Board of County Commissioners and convene as the Story County Water and Sewer Board, bringing us up to number 19, which is discussion of possible action. Approval of Resolution 19-557, making changes to the water rates for service in Virginia City, Gold Hill, and Silver City, and sewer rates in Virginia City and Gold Hill. Who's taking this item?
Thank you, Commissioners. For the record, Lucas Tipton with Far West Engineering. Far West provided a water and sewer rate analysis for the county that we issued a summary memorandum in early September that looked at water and sewer system expenses and future revenues and made some rate adjustment recommendations so that revenues would match expenses moving forward. This was discussed at a past commissioner meeting, and Far West has recommended rate adjustments, annual rate adjustments for the water and sewer system through 2024.
On the water side, it's 1% in fiscal year 2021, 2% in fiscal year 2022, then 2.5% thereafter. Also effective, it will be starting in fiscal year 25, is a CPIU index increase. On the sewer system, it's similar, but that one remains flat at 3% per year through 2024, and then additionally increasing by the CPI starting in fiscal year 25. The findings of the memorandum were noticed to the public, and today's item is to receive approval or discussion and action on those rate recommendations.
Thanks, Lucas. Yeah, we had a workshop on this a little while back. We went over all of this. As much as we don't like raising rates on anything, water and sewer is an enterprise fund, and it has to be paid by the people who use the system. So there is no choice. When we do these improvements, we've recently done on the water in Virginia City and the line coming in from the 5 Mile Reservoir, the sewer, the water, the improvements we're going to continue in Gold Hill with the new processing down there. It's just so we spent millions of dollars and we got to pay for it. So one of the good things is there won't be a rate increase next year. It'll be the following year. And then the rates are pretty tolerable at that point.
Notice there's a nice discount rate for seniors as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which is something that it's been on the books, but it's being recognized more now. Which is, we're always looking out for the seniors, and that's why waste management, we've been able to negotiate to put a 25% senior discount on those rates too, if we decide to continue with waste management. So, since we're on this item here, we'll open up for public comment. Okay. Maybe everybody spoke their piece when we had the workshop. So, yeah. With that said, if we can go ahead and get a motion to approve this resolution, 19-557.
I, Lance Gilman, move to approve resolution number 19-557, making changes to water rates for service in Virginia City, Gold Hill, and Silver City, and sewer rates in Virginia City and Gold Hill.
I'll second.
We move to second to approve resolution 19-557. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Okay, this time we're going to recess the Story County Water and Sewer Board and reconvene the Story County Board of Commissioners. Bringing up item 21, this discussion of possible action, consideration of possible approval of the first reading of ordinance 19-302, establishing the position of Director of Security / Bailiff in the government of Story County. Mr. Loomis.
Keith Loomis, District Attorney's Office. The county has the authority to hire security officers pursuant to NRS 244.167. The security officers have the authority of peace officers when performing their duties required of them by an ordinance. And so while we don't typically have an ordinance creating a position within county government, in this case, because of the desire to have the security officer have the authority of a peace officer, we have prepared the ordinance, which does incorporate the job description as part of the ordinance. And the point is to authorize the new person, the security director / bailiff, to have the authorities of a peace officer. And that job description has been undergoing some changes over time. I think we have even a more recent change that came up last Friday that we'd like to distribute.
That's not
just
that one.
Yeah, what you have.
Okay. All right. So, that is the point of this ordinance. This will be the first reading. We'll read the title in. If there are changes that will be made, we'll make them at the time of the second reading, which will be in approximately after it's been published about 2 weeks.
Okay. Very good. Commissioners, have any questions for Mr. Loomis?
No questions.
Any public comment regarding this item? Okay, so this is the first reading of this ordinance. I can get a motion to approve.
I, Lance Gilman, move to approve the first reading of ordinance number 19-302.
A second.
Moved a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries.
So let me, at this point, I'd like to read in the title to the ordinance. This is an ordinance adding a new chapter to Title II of the Story County Code, creating a position of Director of Security / Bailiff and establishing the duties of that position.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Willis. Do you need to take off?
I'm fine.
Okay, all right.
We're about finished over there.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, we just have three arms up. Okay. All right, we're going to go back to item 7 now, which is discussion only. We'll take no action or public comment. We'll go with community and staff reports.
Mr. Chairman, may I add, I just don't remember when I said that at the beginning, if I said to move staff reports before or after item 22. I believe after 21. Okay.
Yeah.
Then that's, if you feel comfortable with that, then I'm, thank you.
You can still move it to after 22. Chief, because 22 is the action item.
He does that to leave.
Oh.
Yeah. So we're good to go. So,
Mr. Chairman, if I may, yeah. I am going. I have to pick up an individual at the hospital, and I have a notice that they are ready. So
okay,
if I
tell
may,
you what.
I'll excuse myself.
Let's go ahead. Let's go ahead and do 22 first, then. Okay.
Very good. Thank you.
We'll change horses in the middle of the stream here. We're going to hear item 22 first.
Thank you.
And this is discussion of possible action approval of the business license second readings. Commissioners, have any questions regarding this item? Is there any public comment regarding this item? With that said, can we get a motion to approve the business license second readings A through P?
I so move.
I'll second.
Moved and second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Motion carries.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right. We'll see you later.
Yes.
Okay, so representing the Sheriff's Office today, Chief Deputy Mr. Dobson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Nothing to report this time.
All right. Home of Public Works Operations, Mr. Northam.
Thank you, Commissioners. Mike Northam, Operations Projects Coordinator. First item up is the water damage at the VCTC Visitor Center. Work is ongoing, quite a bit more slowly than we would like. The plaster, as I think I reported to you last time, is fairly heavily damaged along a line that mirrors the road on the exterior side, on Taylor Street side. So that's where the water's been coming in apparently for some time. We did get mold clearance. The industrial hygienist has cleared the area for any traces of mold. The wood wainscot on the bottom, approximately one-third of that wall, when we started to pull it apart a little bit to clear out the water damage behind it, it appeared it was made of gypsum wallboard. This was a modern addition to this thing. When they pulled the gypsum wallboard off, we were surprised to find another wood wainscot behind there made of beadboard. After consultation with both SHPO and CHD, they have concurred that it is indeed original to the building. We did find one historic photo that does, in fact, show this beadboard wainscot. So that opened its own can of worms, so to speak. It's, of course, coated in lead-based paint. So we're trying to figure out, SHPO wants us to repair or replace in kind. The problem is if we start doing some work on this thing, we're going to have full-on containment and air scrubbers and that kind of thing. So we're going to try and develop a scope of work that will allow us to encapsulate with modern paint this wall and not get into all of this if possible. So the challenge right now is to create a scope of work that is acceptable to the industrial hygienist and also to SHPO, and then move forward with that. The woodwork, as far as scheduling, is fairly easy. What's going to get a little more difficult is the plaster work. It is historic plaster directly adhered to red brick, same exact system we struggled with in this courthouse.
We're trying to get NNLP. This is a firm that specializes in this historic plaster repair and renovation. We're the same guys who did the ceilings here in the judges' chambers when they were destroyed. But it's a dying art, and those guys know it, and so it'll be difficult to schedule them. So we're going to continue to press forward on that, and I'll have a report if possible. It looks like we are not probably going to make Thanksgiving. I'm hoping to have this work cleared up before Christmas. Second item is the community center, proposed community center out in the Highlands. We continue to develop a feasibility plan. We did investigate several sites out there. The vast majority of them, of course, come with substantial costs due to, mainly to new utilities. You have to run, you know, have to drill a new well, you have to put in a new water treatment, you have to run a new electrical and septic system and leach field. So the real attractive site continues to be an existing metal building right there by Station 72. There's existing utilities on site, and this type of use, meaning intermittent meetings and that kind of thing, generates a fairly small impact to existing systems. But I'm still working on a very tight, high-resolution cost estimate for construction and operation that I can present to the stakeholders, and we'll get some input on that. Third item is the big one. That's the Divide Building tenant improvements. The architect's office and our personnel have completed a technical review of the 100% plan set. We are currently on track for being out to bid November 12. That means a projected bid opening date of December 5. Bid award date would probably be December 17, which would be the first Board of Commissioners meeting following that date. We are planning also to submit for permit on November 6. I did talk to Mr. Acevedo of the Community Development Department. He knows that's inbound. An invitation to bid has been drafted, and as soon as the review is complete, that will be sent out to the local newspaper, the Story County website, and the Nevada Blue and FW Dodge online plan rooms. Those will go live on or about, or hopefully before a little bit, November 8. There are also a short list of approximately 6 contractors that we have had successful projects with in the past. They will be notified directly. Right after this goes live, there will be a deluge of questions coming in from prospective bidders, so I will keep you posted as that proceeds. And the last item, just want to remind everybody, there's a site walk Thursday, November 7th at the depot with some county personnel to have a look at that and develop a strategic plan for development and preservation of that structure. Any questions, sirs?
Anything for Mike? No? Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Here representing the River District today, Marilyn Miller.
Good afternoon, commissioners, county manager. I want to take this opportunity to thank you for allowing me to serve my community of Lockwood for the past 10 years. Peggy France, the vice president, served 10 years also. I owe a big thank you to Maggie Lowther, Mary Lou Walling, Pat Witten, Denny Dodson, Dean Haymore, and the Story County Building Maintenance Crew. These are the people that set this senior center up and made it what it is today. There have been several upgrades and maintenance projects over the past 10 years. The advisory board will always be grateful for the cooperation we received to make a world of difference to the Lockwood Rainbow Bend Community Senior Center. I would like to recognize the members who over the past represented the center with all their best interests. Currently, the board is as follows: Marilee Miller, chairperson; Peggy France, vice chairperson; Shirley Miller, secretary; Willie Knox, treasurer; Edna Cudsworth, and Char Haldeman, members at large. It is through this board of directors and all that held office before them that I thank you for allowing us to serve the citizens of Lockwood. Respectfully, Marilee Miller. Thank you so much, guys.
It's very nice, Marilee. Thank you.
It's a joke.
Going forward, instead of going to each individual director, what I'm asked is, I think Commissioner Carmona is pressed for time. Who has the most important things to bring up to the board today of the directors that are left? The directors, please. You're not a director yet.
Stacy?
Yes.
Okay.
Be quick. So, Stacy York, for the record, the most important thing I wanted to do today was introduce Beth Kemp. She's our new Lockwood site manager. So, here come the changes to Lockwood. She's excited to be here, or she has to be.
Let's hold on about 30 seconds.
Okay.
Continue, Stacy.
All right, perfect. So I just wanted to introduce Beth today, and you'll be seeing her face a lot more. And if you need anything down at the Lockwood Senior Community Center, she's your go-to person.
Great. So. Welcome aboard, Beth. Okay.
Thanks, Thank Stacy.
She will hold office down there at the Lockwood?
Working on it.
Okay. Welcome.
Almost there.
All right. Any other directors, manager have pressing stuff? Okay. Eric, we'll have you come up next then. Eric Schoen of Community Chess and the Library.
So for the record, Eric Schoen, and first of all, I apologize for my casual appearance. I do believe in the dignity of the sport and the work that you do, and it was one of those mornings where I forgot there was a county meeting that I really wanted to attend and give you guys an update. So just so you know, I'm fully aware that I should be more fully
You're
dressed.
A working guy here.
So I wanted to give you a couple of updates. And I know, Commissioner Carmona, if you're pressed for time, you may not be able to stay for the whole thing. But our early childhood education center is now up to 11 little ones. And we finally have made some key hires to expand our staff. That was our sticking point. The low unemployment rate makes it hard to find qualified folks, and especially for a position as sensitive as this, raising our most precious vulnerable children. We try to make sure we do our due diligence, and we've finally made some key hires. So we're up to 11 kiddos, which means we have room for about another 8 or 9. So if folks have little ones that they're looking for preschool, early childhood education, please, we still have open spots. Earlier in October, we ran a haunted trolley. You may have heard of that. It was the first time we've done that. Basically, what we did was we borrowed the trolley that goes up and down C Street. We decorated it out. We had a pumpkin patch at our community center, and we essentially turned Virginia City into a haunted house. We had several actors, including yours truly, who had makeup and were ghosts of various sorts. It was basically a G-rated haunted house experience with people on the trolley, so as they drove through, the ghosts would come out and scare the little ones and the family. We even had a fake breakdown where a swarm of zombies would get close, and then they would start, Poppy would start the trolley just in time to get away. We had maybe 100 family members, kiddos, and their parents come up, and it was basically the best, I think, sort of Halloween-themed fundraiser we've ever done. And the description that we heard is it was like a Halloween Polar Express where people really enjoy that. So we're anticipating doing that again next year with great participation from local bars and taverns, business owners, as well as some of the other nonprofits, too, who agreed to let our ghosts haunt their places during this run. So it was a lot of fun. Our angel trees should be coming up soon. As a reminder, that's where people can basically call in to us or nominate somebody to receive a warm clothing item. We'll put it on one of the trees. Last year we had, I think, 4 or 5 through various businesses and locations throughout Story County. And then we will take care of getting them the warm clothing item. Oftentimes these people will have holiday food boxes as well during Christmas. So if you know somebody in need who needs a warm clothing item, whether it's boots or even a work item. Sometimes work boots are a little too expensive, or a pair of jeans or a winter coat. Please consider letting us know so we can get them on the angel tree. I think that you should see those within the next week or so. And that also brings me up to, we will be taking names for people who need holiday boxes both for Thanksgiving and Christmas. And for those who are unfamiliar with those boxes, we basically try to provide a full Thanksgiving dinner for the size of the family. So not only do we need the name, but we would need the size of the family. And then we provide them with either a ham or a turkey for Thanksgiving, and then something slightly different for Christmas. So again, you can call over to Community Chest, and we will make sure they are on the list. I'm hoping people are having a better experience with the medical clinic. We did go ahead and decide to pay for an upgrade on our current wireless internet access pipeline. So we've increased the size of the data stream, if you will. It's been better on my staff's side, and I think it's better on the medical clinic side as well. I'd be interested in feedback for people who have used it within the last few weeks. So if people out there have tried the medical clinic and tried the telehealth option, please reach out to me and let me know if it's an improvement over what we've had. I'm sure we still have room to grow and to continue. And then lastly, I wanted to give you guys a little bit of an overview of the Story County Library. And if you'd like a more in-depth presentation with pictures, because they really bring the place to life, just wanted to give you a few stats. Over the last 6 months, our library services usage, which includes thing walk-ins, people who aren't necessarily patrons, they're just coming in to use the library, whether for computer access or for faxes or printing something, checking email, just looking around, hanging out. We have ranged from a low of 42 in August to a high of 128 different instances of usage throughout the library. In October, we had 54. The number of books have ranged, checked out, have ranged from 13 to 52, a high of 52 in October. The number of patrons, that would be the actual folks who have a card and are checking out the books, has more than doubled when we started keeping stats from 5 in April to 12 in October. And the number of e-books checked out has ranged from 14 to 36 per month. This also does not include the various meetings that we hold. We allow different groups to use the space upstairs. The most active club that uses our group is the Youth Robotics Club. They use it biweekly, and they have 25 to 35 little ones, middle schoolers. They're probably not so little. Probably wouldn't be appreciate being called little ones, but we have 25 to 35 middle schoolers and their parents who come up. And if you're ever up there when they have their club, it's really kind of fun and infectious. It makes you wish you were that young again to see them trying to make robots do specific tasks that they are assigned from the national group. And so the total number of people who used the center through the various meetings was over 200 for our month of October. So it gives you an idea of just the utilization. I know people wonder how often how the library is being utilized. It's kind of being used as a / community center, meeting space, traditional library, tech access, classroom space. Do you guys have any questions about that? No?
No. Good overview. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay, our water and wastewater projects. Mike Nevin.
Thank you again, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Mike Nevin on Comstock. Just a quick report here on the Hillside Tank Project. We're working with Far West to obtain the services of the geologists. Still, there's been a couple of little issues back and forth, and we just got word this morning that we hope to have some resolve to being able to get Piedmont up here, hopefully within the next week or two. So we'll be working with Austin and Jason on a couple of things regarding that. The 60% drawings are, of course, on hold until we get that completed because we don't want to have to keep making modifications unnecessarily. So we decided to hold up on those. The Comstock Historic District Committee meeting that was scheduled for last month had to be continued due to a staff emergency. So we're on their agenda for the 18th of November for the color and viewshed requirement approvals up there. The walkthrough of the pipeline portion of that project, and as well as the Virginia City Sewer Improvement Project, was successfully completed on the 15th. All outstanding warranty issues were addressed by the contractor and to the satisfaction of both the county and the USDA folks. We all met and on site that day, so that's been handled. The Gold Hill Wastewater Treatment Plant Project, the procurement documents, commonly referred to as EJCDC, which is Engineers Joint Contract Documents Committee, and the bid package for the factory-built equipment have been completed and reviewed. The USDA did come back to us and recommended that we utilize the updated version of the contract documents, which takes it from 2013 to 2019. So we're in the process of moving the information over to those contract documents. It's just basically boilerplate stuff. That'll be completed by Thursday of this week, and then that portion will go out to bid. And we hope to have a bid opening on the 26th of November for the equipment portion of that project. And this, once we get that, it'll allow us to, you know, finalize the building, the layout, that sort of thing. So, and we're looking at the possibility there are 8 to 9 vendors that supply this type of equipment. So we don't see any issues there. It's just meeting the requirements of the USDA as far as that bid is concerned. So that's all I have to report to you right now.
Great.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mike. All right. Public Works Director, Jason Wierzbicki.
Jason Wierzbicki for the record. Just a couple quick updates. Actively today, we're out paving and doing some rather large patches out on Lousetown in the Highlands. And I want to thank you guys for the approval of the road rehab project contract, because S&C's wanting to move on this pretty quick to try to get some of these rebuilds done before the hot plant closes for the year. So I'll be coming back to Austin probably tomorrow or Thursday with contract documents to sign, because they want to start Monday. So they think that we'll be able to get this wrapped up in a few weeks. So that's all I have.
Well, we know there's more roads to do next year, right? So
yeah,
it's going to keep on going.
Yeah.
I like the way the bid came in. It was about 5% under the higher bid. So that was,
yeah,
that's good. Anything for Jason? Nothing? Okay. How about our new director at the TRIGID, Ms. Whelan? Do you have anything today?
Commissioners, thank you. Sherry Whelan, General Manager of the Tri-General Improvement District, for the record. I just would like to say thank you for authorizing staff to enter into the lease agreement. We are excited. Hopefully, once the 10 improvements are constructed, we can occupy the new space by the end of the calendar year. And that's a very big deal to the General Improvement District. As you know, we've been operated in a segmental fashion historically, and so bringing all of the administrative responsibilities into one location, actually at the Tri-Center, is a critical piece of our transition plan. So I just appreciate very much your action today. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Ms. Whelan. Okay. Over at the Planning Department, Kathy Canfield?
Nothing today.
Nothing? Okay. The Comptroller's Office, Mr. Gallagher.
Nothing today, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Chief Deputy District Attorney, Mr. Loomis.
Mr. Chairman, this is kind of for your information. The contract that the board approved for the food service to the Sheriff's Office
The company that was going to provide that food service has gone out of business, so the sheriff's office will be looking for a new vendor. We'll bring it back to you.
Wow. Okay. I miss anybody in the audience. Okay. County Manager, Mr. Osborne.
Mr. Chairman, in the interest of time, I'm going to hold the comments to next meeting. Thank you.
Okay. County Clerk, Ms. Vanessa. Nothing today? Okay. With that, we will continue on to item number 8. These are board comments. Commissioner Carmona?
Nothing today.
Nothing today? In the interest of time, I only have one item today. That would be that, of course, everybody probably knows it. They read the newspaper, but the passing of three-term district attorney Virgil Bucaneri recently. Virgil was a longtime resident of Gold Hill and then Virginia City. He was a funny guy. He put many years on the Planning Commission. He always had some great anecdotes for people when they had comments about things. He'd been around a long time. He'd been around 81 years, and always celebrated his birthday with Angelo Petrini on Christmas Eve. And I said he went three terms then, I believe it was, as the Story County District Attorney, many, many years on the Planning Commission. He was my neighbor for many years, and in my year in the saloon business, he used to frequent my dad's bar every once in a while, and always came in with something lively to talk about. And then on an annual basis, he would put on his annual Columbus Day party, usually at the Comstock, which is now the Palace, either there or the Mark Twain Saloon. So, anyway, he was quite the character, and he was a jolly fellow. So. His friends and family are going to miss him a lot. He was a nice guy. So anyway, rest in peace, Virgil. So that's going to conclude the regular portion of our meeting. So right now we get to the best part of it all, and this is for public comment. You've been waiting for a long time. So if you'd like to come up to the podium.
Howdy again. Good morning, commissioners and everybody out there. A few months back, I addressed the commissioners regarding speeding down Washington Street and the kids who misuse and abuse their ATVs on the public roads. With that said, I'd like to address NRS 483580. So everybody's on the same page. It states parents will be held for negligence for allowing any unlicensed minor less than 16 years of age to drive a vehicle upon any public maintained road. All off-road vehicle drivers must be licensed, and ATV or off-road vehicles must be registered with insurance. If under 16 years of age, must be accompanied by a licensed adult driver. I don't know how you don't understand, people don't understand that. Accordance with 484261 of Nevada Vehicle Code, a person shall not drive a vehicle at a rate of speed greater than is reasonable or proper, having due regard for the traffic, service, and width of the highways, the weather and other highway conditions, or at such a speed as to endanger life, limb, or property of any persons and horses. Okay. With that said, I'm not going to go into the incident, but there's an incident on September 13th where three hoodlums, I think one was 6, 11, and 12, started to come on our street, N Street, which nobody ever had before, and speeding with the dust behind him and all that. And so, of course, long story short, I got involved, told them to get off the property. You know, you're not allowed there. And they're flipping me off and all this other nonsense, going to hell and stuff. And that was on Saturday. On Sunday, it got to the point that that I involved the police. And so, And I know, and I was told by the Sheriff's Department that a lot of complaints have come in about ATV kids and also speeding on Washington Street. It's very clear it's 20 miles per hour, and right in front of our house on Inn and Washington is 15. I guess nobody knows math anymore. Anyways, it got to a point that I had to call because the kids were harassing me, and then, of course, my husband later. When I called the police in the past, we'll have people out there and everything, and at the last meeting, the sheriff did have deputies go up and down, and it caused the speeders to slow down, but nobody was ever issued a ticket. Finally, what is his name? One of the deputies came out to assess the situation, and what a fiasco. It got so frustrating that out of my desperation, I contacted Commissioner Jay Carman and Chief Deputy Dawson. Of all the years we've been here, they're the only two that actually helped us, get this situation handled. At the end of this day, my husband, a decorated Vietnam veteran Marine, was arrested because, in all due wisdom, the deputy decided that my husband's word wasn't good enough, but these punks were. They lied about him touching them, which a Marine would never do, about they're just so innocent, and that never happened. And then when the parents finally showed up, the youngest one said, I have bruises on my shoulders, and showed. Well, believe me, if my husband touched him, he'd be screaming. So anyway, with a little bit of this information shared, it is my recommendation that one, which we asked 2 months ago, the speed limit signs, 20 miles and 15, be posted higher on all the different telephone poles. Number two, I searched the records of the Sheriff's Department. Not one child has ever, or their parents ever, been reprimanded or ticketed or anything. Also, there are numerous complaints about the speeding and the ATVs. The two final things that pissed me off is, one, when the kids went through all the horses and this poor little foal was running on the hillside on Old Street and fell, and he got up with a limp. That was the first thing. I'm getting old. I forgot. The deputy, in his wisdom, even though with this law that I just read and put my husband in a police car, he let the kids, those hooligans, just ride off into the sunset by themselves. No parent, no helmet, no driver's license, and no insurance. What kind of justice is that? That's crap. So, and the deputy also told me that he can construe what the Nevada law is. No, you can't. I mean, if it says specifically no unaccompanied person shall ride this 16 without a parent, how can you make comments that he can say what he feels it means? There has to be something to be done, and obviously the Sheriff Department, except for the Assistant Deputy, and of course the Commissioners, and especially Jay Camano, thank you for even listening. So, that's it.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
All right. More public comment. If you'd like to speak, I need you to come up to the podium. Briefly. That way we can get you on tape. Thank you.
And good morning. My name is Doctor. I've been in Virginia City here for the last 17 years as part of the entertainment. And my My biggest job, and I took that personally, is that is the meet and greet, and I meet tourism. I know how important tourism is for Virginia City. Without tourism, of course, this town would actually dry up. I know you all do something a little bit different than I do, and you keep the road safe and all the other things that we talked about, or y'all talked about this morning. I do things a little bit differently as I try and bring tourism at its peak. Every year, I try to do something that's that keeps that tourism rolling. And we do a lot of tourism, and I'm happy about it, and that's what I do well. But just to make a point here, during that day, October 13th, I was talking to the youngest kid. And I still don't know what his age is. I know he had a mini bike. He was a small child, so I knew that he certainly didn't have a license. But I asked him, excuse me, I asked him if he had a driver's license, and he said, "I don't know." I said, "Well, where are your parents?" "I don't know." And it was the third question, but he didn't know that either. And I said, "Well, I'm not going to allow you to drive on Washington Street without adult supervision," and which there was none. And anyway, with without registration, insurance, and what is it? Registration, driver's license, and insurance. I can't allow you to drive on the streets of Virginia City. And so I can't tell you what he told me, but I do have a video on social media. It's been up for 3 or 4 days, and so far we have 3,304 people that have actually seen it. I got five pages, and this is what I do. I'm in the entertainment business. Not only that, I'm a movie maker. I'm actually accredited producer, director, and scriptwriter. I do everything I do for the most part is for Virginia City. I have many volunteers. The movies I do, as many as 50 people at a time. And each movie on the credits is filmed at Virginia Nevada Studios in Virginia City, Nevada. I'm probably one of the single person that advertises and promotes Virginia City that I know of. Probably one of the biggest ones. I know y'all have committees. Denny Dotson, me and Denny work well together. We've had several shows. I've had one of the biggest shows at the Opera House last year. It was about a 4-hour concert. It was just huge. But the fact is that I'm glued to Virginia City. I love my community. There's no other town in. I've been to other historical cities in our fine country, but nothing like Virginia City. And I absolutely love my community. And it was so disappointing for me to get arrested by the Sheriff's Department that I've supported for 17 years. I've had Jerry on my show, on my talk show, and I've been on his talk show. We've had a mutual experience. I mean, I get arrested, where am I going? There was no reason for the arrest. But I get arrested because I didn't allow this kid to get out on the paved roads, which is illegal. So I get handcuffed in the squad car, and with the wisdom of the arresting officer that day, he allowed these kids to leave. When they went by the police car, I'm in the back, handcuffs. Each one of the little one went first, and then the two older kids, and I when I say older, 12, 13 years old, as they go by me, they stick their head out, and this is what both of them do. And again, no supervision, no driver's license, no registration. So they have special privileges for some reason, and I don't know why they have special privileges. I don't. I know most of you people in the audience don't have the special privileges either. If you've ever been on C Street, you know who I am. I stand for integrity, honesty, and positivity. And that is unchallenged. And with the comments I got on social media, and I've said that in my video, not one person would challenge that. And they can't. But that's what I stand for. And because I represent Virginia City. I'm one of the icons of Virginia City. No matter where I go, Reno, Carson, most people know me. A lot of people know me. I've missed one parade in 17 years. One parade in 17 years. So I have a pretty good fan base. And so I'm just not quite understanding the laws. I'd like to have that defined a little bit. But to have those kids, have the deputy allow those kids to leave and drive on our streets if you were to go ahead and pull up, I have a video that talks in great length. It's on my social media page, and it's Facebook, and it's Doctor. You pull that up, and you'll get most of the story. Then you can read the comments, and this is what Virginia City is talking about, and they all say the same thing. They're all 100% of all the comments are saying the same thing. And so that's probably all I have to say. The rest of it, I guess, will have to be in court, but I just want you all to know that it was important what my wife was saying, is that the kids are underage, uninsured, unlicensed, and they're running up and up and down our paved streets. All right. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm sure the chief deputy will take your concerns back to his office.
Thank you.
All right. Additional public comment? Hearing none? We'll see everybody here on the 19th.